Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
The attorneys at Gingras, Thompson, and Wachs have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com. Welcome to another podcast at Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the Operating Engineers, Local 139. Also, our friends with the Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters, Local 311, and Madison Teamsters, Local 695. John Nichols, Associate Editor of the Capital Times, also writer for The Nation with us. All right, comrade, did you watch the debate?
Of course I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's like, grew up in Racine County, man. And when the county fair was on, did I go to the demolition derby? You bet.
Ha! No. I think you owe demolition derbies an apology, but here's a little bit of the coverage.
High gear in the home stretch tonight. President Trump seizing on Joe Biden's pledge to replace fossil fuels with renewable energy.
Joe Biden admitted that he wants to abolish the oil industry. That wasn't too good. Did you see him this morning? This morning, I didn't really mean that.
Biden making the remarks near the end of last night's showdown.
Would you close down the oil industry?
By the way, I would transition from the oil industry, yes.
Oh,
I would transition. It is a big statement.
That's a big
statement. Because I would stop.
Why would you do that?
Because the oil industry pollutes significantly.
Comments that could be costly in battleground states that rely on the oil and gas industry. Biden clarifying after the debate.
We're getting rid of the subsidies for fossil fuels, but we're not getting rid of fossil fuels for a long time.
Meantime, the former VP today focusing on the pandemic.
The president still doesn't have a plan. He's given up. He's quit on you.
After this moment on the debate stage.
Anyone who's responsible for that many deaths should not remain as president of the United States of America.
Last night's final face-off, moderated by NBC's Kristen Welker, a tamer, more traditional debate. The president positioning as an outsider.
Why didn't he get it done? See, it's all talk, no action with his politicians.
President Trump also attacking Biden over unsubstantiated claims related to his son, Hunter Biden's business dealings.
All of the emails, the horrible emails of the kind of money that you were raking in, you and your family. And Joe, you were vice president when some of this was happening.
I have not taken a penny from any foreign source ever in my life.
The Wall Street Journal now reporting that documents provided to the newspaper by Hunter Biden's former business partner show no role for the former VP. Both candidates making their pitch, though nearly 53 million Americans have already cast ballots.
I ran because of you. I ran because of Barack Obama, because you did a poor job. If I thought you did a good job, I would have never run.
You know his character. You know my character. You know our reputations for honor and telling the truth.
President Trump holding two rallies in Florida tonight, a state considered key to his reelection. The Biden campaign keeping it competitive, with former President Obama set to campaign in Florida tomorrow.
All right. Your thoughts.
The emails. The horrible emails. He's starting to sound a little like Woody Allen. No, he, I mean, Trump. He's starting to sound like he's doing some kind of shtick, you know, in the Catskills or something.
Has he ever stopped doing shtick?
No, I realize, but it's getting, once it seems sort of provocative and bad boy and, you know, at least, you know, somehow that there, somebody, I wasn't, but somebody might have been, you know, impressed. Now he's degenerating into this sort of self-parody.
You know what, Charlie,
like a guy imitating Donald Trump.
Charlie Sykes calls him Fat Elvis.
That's a little insulting to Fat Elvis, but he has gone to this parody place, and I do think that weakens him even to some extent with his own base. But I guess the main thing I'd come away from the debate with is that this is how far the whole thing has degenerated. that the report on it is that it was a calmer, more temperate debate, you know, more traditional debate. There was nothing traditional about that debate. If Gerald Ford or Ronald Reagan or Bob Dole or George W. Bush or John McCain or Mitt Romney came into a debate and made wholly unsubstantiated charges, you know, just like went off the deep end, the whole country would pause and say, "Oh, he's lost it. He's gone nuts." If you had a situation with a pandemic and, you know, with surging numbers and everything, any of those previous Republican candidates had gotten on a stage and said, "We're turning the corner. Everything's going great. You know, it's heading in the right direction." Again, it would have been, you would have pulled a full halt, right? You would have broken and say, "You know, Mr. President, are you aware of what's going on out there?" And instead, even now, Trump is given, you know, sort of like this, I don't know, like kind of kid's pass. People say, "Oh, well, yeah, you know, he doesn't know how to behave. And so if he tries a little bit to behave, then it's kind of okay." So that's my sense of the core of the debate, because debates are always about Trump. Now, as regards Biden, the fact of the matter is that Biden came to this debate with a core message, and that was that COVID is resurgent, that it is an incredible danger, that people are dying. He delivered that immediately at the top of the debate, and I would argue probably won the debate. And I mean, for the actual, if a debate, winning a debate is about talking to the voters where they are, about what they need to hear, he probably won the debate with his opening statement. And I don't say that casually. It's not like I'm trying to say, "Oh, yeah, he did great." He didn't do all that great. He wasn't perfect. But that opening statement where he just recited the numbers and talked about, he indicted Donald Trump, that was incredibly effective. And then as you went through the debate, it was clear that Biden had prepared. He had, you know, a lot of just kind of memorable lines that he was ready to deliver at key points, remained steady throughout. My bottom line is I would say the debate probably didn't move a lot of numbers because Biden is way ahead, at least if we believe the polls, and I'd be cautious about that. But if in the polling, I suspect it probably won't move a lot of numbers, but that's very bad for Trump because he needed to move numbers.
Here's another clip from the debate.
"We're learning to live with it. We have no choice. We can't lock ourselves up in a basement like Joe does. He has the ability to lock himself up. I don't know. He's obviously made a lot of money someplace, but he has this thing about living in a basement. People can't do that."
He says that we're learning to live with it. People are learning to die with it. "You folks home will have an empty chair at the kitchen table this morning. That man or wife going to bed tonight and reaching over to try to touch their, out of habit, where their wife or husband was, is gone. Learning to live with it. Come on. We're dying with it."
All right. I thought that was a powerful moment. Yesterday, I was at Walgreens, standing in line 6 feet behind the person that was actually at the cash register. Some old man walked into the store. This is the Walgreens on Mineral Point Road in Madison, Wisconsin. Walks in, picks up a newspaper from the newspaper rack, cuts in front of me, no mask, right? And goes, "Oh, yeah, do you mind?" And I said, "Yeah, I mind. First of all, you're not social distancing. Second of all, you don't have a mask on. Where the hell's your mask?" And he just flew off the handle. And I got to tell you, John, I know who he's voting for.
Yeah, you do. Well, probably. There are some people who just can't control themselves. But it is interesting that I think Trump has done very well at grouping the people who can't control themselves into a political movement. But look, as regards to the debate, you know, what you heard in the debate.
No, I'm just talking about the impact this man has had on people's bad behavior.
Well, that was what I was going to suggest is that if you heard Trump there, it was an incoherent set of just one-liners, right? That didn't even have a flow to them. You know, it was like, we're turning the corner. We can't stay in the basement. Biden stays in the basement. He makes a lot of money. You know, it's just all this kind of a slurry of attack.
Yeah, but by the way, where is the evidence that Joe Biden is in his basement?
I know that's just a line that they've peddled for a long time. There isn't real evidence of it. The fact of the matter is that Biden has done, you know, a tremendous number of events already physically. He's also done, you know, a lot of what everybody else does today, which is Zoom events and different platforms. And so there's very little evidence that he's in his basement. The fact is that he is probably upstairs in a room in his house quite often, frankly, socially distanced, but meeting with people planning the next presidential administration, because it does look like that is a possibility.
I suspect Ron Klain is pretty busy.
Yes. I do think that Biden should be out more. It's not, you know, I'm not going to diminish that. Biden should be out more because, especially in this last 10 days, there is a need for the physical presence, you know, landing at the tarmac, you know, in state after state. Just that level of publicity that comes with it is a part of the close of a campaign, even a COVID campaign. So, you know, the dig is not to be dismissed entirely. But if we go to the core of your concern there, your guy in the line, right, and the behavior of some people, what Trump is doing at this point is just, you know, kind of wildly throwing out fodder, if you will, one-liners, anything he can to cheer these people on, to encourage them, keep them feeling bold and strong in their behaviors, right? And the reason for that is that he knows that his job at this point is just to maintain his base. He's not trying to expand beyond it. And that's a pretty awful place to be as a sitting president running for re-election. It does cause problems. There's no doubt of that. It will probably cause more problems as we get closer to the election. But the contrast to that, if you listen first to the incoherent kind of wild efforts to just hit every little line he can for his base, it basically sounded like, you know, the comment section on a Breitbart article. Then you've got Biden over on the other side with this very coherent, very solid statement about the problem that rises to a poignant line about, you know, we're not learning to live with it, we're dying from it. So I just think Biden had in that exchange, which I think defined the debate.
Here's another clip of Donald Trump.
But how will you reunite the kids with their families,
let me just tell you,
Mr. President?
They built cages.
Do you have
they
a plan
cages.
To reunite the kids?
Yes, we're working
families?
On it very. We're trying very hard. But a lot of these kids come out without the parents. They come over through cartels and through coyotes and through gangs.
Kristen, I will say this: they went down. We brought reporters. Everything. They are so well taken care of. They're in facilities that were so clean.
So, well, when he said that they're working hard, okay. Would you put that at the level of OJ working hard trying to find Nicole's killer? About that same level?
I would put it at the level, Sly, of you working hard to be polite.
Now that is not. I resent that. I am exceedingly polite. No,
You're wonderful.
No,
polite.
I am
in the line.
I am not polite to assholes. No, that's true.
Anyway, I'm teasing. But no, look. The fact of the matter is that for Trump, when he says he's working hard, right? That sounds really weak, right? Because Trump's whole brand has been, you know, if something needs to get done, I'll do it, right? I'm not going to, you know, get tripped up by bureaucracy or things like that. And the fact of the matter is that if Donald Trump signaled immediately, I just don't want any more of this. I don't want to ever hear another report of children separated from their parents or parents lost in the system or whatever else is going on. We got to deal with that immediately. It would be dealt with. So the fact is he isn't working hard, and frankly, he sounds like he's not particularly interested in it. But also, this is one of the things that I think happened throughout the debate, and it was sort of fascinating. Donald Trump, again and again and again in this debate, particularly on issues of immigrant rights and race, it just said things that were so antithetical to, so opposite of what the general impression of him is, and that includes what the impression even of his supporters may be toward him, that it was dysfunctional. It didn't work because he was saying something that was so over the top.
Yeah, it's hard to spin a pandemic when it's affecting people's lives. Here is former Vice President Joe Biden yesterday speaking in Wilmington about the pandemic.
Wearing a mask is not a political statement. It's a scientific imperative. It's a point of patriotic pride so we can pull our country out of this god-awful spiral we're in. And it's a testament to the values we were taught by our families and by our faiths. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Once we have a safe and effective vaccine, it has to be free to everyone, whether or not you're insured. Let me say that again. The vaccine must be free and freely available to everyone. This is just not one more reason why it's so despicable that Donald Trump is fighting in the middle of a pandemic to get the U.S. Supreme Court to strike down the entire Affordable Care Act, which I worked so damn hard to get the votes for. Under the ACA, insurers are required to cover recommended vaccines for free. So overturning the ACA would mean people have to pay to get COVID-19 vaccine. That's wrong.
You know, those are the words that he's using and use his faith. Just reminds me of the appeal Bobby Kennedy and Jerry Brown had with Catholics that believed in social justice. Not just a one-way trip of you and God, but community and God. Did I get too theological there?
You know, not at all. In fact, you're exactly right. And duty and the duties that go with it.
Right.
Right? And do you think that Biden's getting better?
Yeah.
Kind of as the campaign's going on, he's kind of sort of hitting his mark.
Mm-hmm.
I do too. And one of the things that's interesting about Biden is his comfort with his faith. And that's a big deal. Remember in the convention speech where he even talked about wrestling with faith issues, you know, especially after some really traumatic things in his life. And there is an openness and an honesty to the guy in this regard that may be one of his most underestimated or understood strengths as a candidate. And as he's coming to the close here, he's very comfortable showing it. And my sense is that will yield some significant benefits politically, right? But it also, frankly, if he does get elected, obviously there's still a lot of ifs there, but if he does get elected and he kind of keeps carrying forward with this, it's a very effective way to communicate to the nation, not as a candidate, but as a president.
We'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works and also Jeff's Guitar Clinic. John Nichols, Associate Editor of the Capital Times and writer for The Nation with us. All right, I want to talk about the Wisconsin aspect of the whole COVID outbreak. You know, we're a hot spot and there's a lot going on. Let me just play. This was one of the lead stories on NBC last night.
This is Gabe Gutierrez in Madison, Wisconsin, where the COVID units at University Hospital keep growing.
I'm very scared that if this doesn't stop soon, we're going to end up with a much bigger problem.
Dr. Katie Gavinsky started working here this summer. It's much busier now.
How much worse do you think this could get?
I think, unfortunately, it could get really, really terrible. It's devastating. It's terrifying to see someone struggling to breathe. You can see the fear in their eyes. You can see how scared they are.
This COVID unit has 28 beds. It reached that capacity not long ago. It's now down to 20 patients, and this hospital is making plans for this winter as flu season takes hold. This is one of the hospital's three COVID units. It was once just one hallway. Now it's four.
People who are sitting in here are very sick.
Nurse Katie Lanaway knows the hardest part.
They are lonely. They are dealing with this alone, and it's becoming increasingly harder for us to try to manage and playing all these different roles, playing the nurse, playing the support person. It's very difficult.
If I had told you a year ago, John, a year from now, Governor Evers will have to set up a field hospital in West Dallas at the state fairgrounds to take incoming patients from a pandemic, what would you say?
Well, obviously, I would have been dubious. I wouldn't have believed that that was where we were headed as a state or as a country. First off, because I'm not somebody that's some great expert on pandemics, or I would never claim that, or even on the health threat extending from it. But more importantly, and I think like you, I would have assumed that we had the healthcare infrastructure, as bad as our healthcare system is, and I'm a huge critic of it, I would have assumed that we had the baseline infrastructure to deal with, you know, a serious surge in any kind of health problem, of any kind of challenge. And it's quite clear that we don't. And so I guess that the main thing I would take away from this is twofold. Number one, it's clear we've handled, as a country, we've handled this crisis horribly, and it has become politicized. And the people on the wrong side of the politics of this thing are guilty men who need to be remembered as such, not just in this campaign, but for the rest of their lives. That's number one. And number two, we have to understand the policy crisis that this exposes. What COVID-19 has done in Wisconsin, a state that I think thinks of itself as still, you know, with all of Scott Walker's damage, thinks of itself as a pretty well-organized state, is in Wisconsin and nationally, we really have to think about our failed policies, about what doesn't work. Because the fact is, when you're setting up field hospitals to deal with a pandemic, you obviously do not have a sufficient healthcare infrastructure.
Here is Charlie Sykes yesterday talking about Wisconsin and the pandemic and the Republicans.
And this is the story that's dominating politics in Wisconsin. Now, the Republican legislature probably won't be affected by this because of gerrymandering and other things. They're going to keep their majorities. But I think it's very likely that this will cost Donald Trump Wisconsin in the presidential election. And you don't know what's going to happen on election day. You don't know how bad it's going to be. I will tell you that on my phone every day I get panicky text messages from the Republican Party saying, vote early, get your ballot in. Because I think they realize that maybe this strategy of encouraging people might actually be backfiring on them.
Get through.
Right. And so tomorrow morning, people are going to wake up in Wisconsin with new headlines about the new number of cases, the record number of cases, the record number of hospitalization, the rising death count. And they're going to find out that an appeals court here went along in throwing out the governor's latest efforts to control this. And then the president is coming back here to southeastern Wisconsin to have another super spreader event in Waukesha. And the takeaway from that is not going to be, wow, the president is rallying the base in Wisconsin. It's going to be, he's coming here at a time when we are experiencing a genuine crisis, and he continues to engage in this magical thinking. This is not working out well for him in Wisconsin.
If I had asked you 7 years ago, hey,
oh, 4 years ago, 5 years.
Well, four years ago, you
he
know,
was
Charlie
better.
Was becoming
yeah.
a never Trumper, but can you imagine? So, all right, so there's that. And then there's Steve Cortez working on behalf of the president, doing interviews with Wisconsin media. Listen to this.
We would be the first to tell a 95-year-old infirm Wisconsinite with a heart condition, probably not a good idea to come to the Trump rally or to come to anything crowded. That person needs to be really guarded and protected right now until we get to a vaccine. But we also believe that a healthy 35-year-old Wisconsinite who loves the president, who clamors for a connection with him physically and with other fellow supporters of the president, that yes, they can safely come to an outdoor event.
People.
First of all, does he understand what infirmed means? Infirmed people don't go to to rallies.
Yeah, they're not going anyway.
They're infirmed. Second of all, 35-year-olds have to be with him physically. What are these people, 12?
Yeah, I know, and love the president and want to have a physical connection with him. I mean, okay, that's fine. But I just would add one little codicil here. Does that healthy 35-year-old who comes to the packed-in rally without masks, without social distancing, you know, at a time of a surge in COVID cases and deaths in Wisconsin, does that 35-year-old person go home after they go to that rally?
Yeah.
Do they visit their, you know, mom or their grandmother? I mean, who else do they go see over the next week or so?
You know,
it's not just the people that go to the rally.
The death rate for young people is pretty high.
But fine. I agree with you 100%. It's pretty high. But even if we accept this guy's premises, right, it the whole point of science, the whole point of understanding epidemiology is that we recognize that if you go to an event and you get sick and then you unknowingly travel in your circle, and maybe that 35-year-old works at a nursing home, maybe that 35-year-old works, you know, in some sort of setting where he's going to be in contact with a lot of folks who are vulnerable. Holding the super spreader event is the wrongdoing, right? That is the damage. And then from it extends all kinds of damage, maybe not to just to the individuals who are there, but to the whole community.
Okay,
that's what we know about this.
So Mitchell Field said no to Donald Trump's rally, so he's doing an event in Waukesha. Not surprising. He's a little soft in Waukesha County for what a Republican should be. Yeah. What is it?
Yes. Pause for a second. You were talking about, you know, a year ago would I have thought this, or 7 years ago would I have thought that. What do you know from the history of Wisconsin about a Republican who is going to Waukesha County, you know, within 10 days of the election?
It means they're in big trouble.
Big, big, big trouble.
Yeah, right. So anyway, Charlie Sykes said something about this won't affect the legislative races. Well, it might not affect control of the legislature. You know, I think Republicans will probably control both houses. But within those numbers, I know in the Senate, the Democrats kind of drew a tough hand this year and are a little bit on defense. Mm-hmm. But even Alberta Darling has got a race on her hands. And in the Assembly, Robin Voss's numbers in his district are terrible. Now, I think Robin Voss will probably get reelected, but the fact that he's having to go out and campaign?
Yeah. Well, understand this. Robin Voss's opponent, Joel Jacobson, has run a very good campaign. And Joel Jacobson, who's from right down there in Burlington, rooted in the district.
This is your home turf, right?
I know it very well. I know the people involved on all sides, including Robin. And the fact of the matter is that this time the Democrats found a good candidate who's raised enough money to run a viable campaign, and Robin Voss has made he's done severe damage, and so I don't want to undermine the damage, but he has also made a fool of himself during the course of this year. And if you know that little corner of southeastern Wisconsin, people are pretty serious about themselves, for better or worse. And the behavior of Robin Voss has made him vulnerable. I agree with you that he's likely to get reelected. The reason he's likely to get reelected is that when we talk about gerrymandering, ground zero for gerrymandering is that district.
Yes.
Robin Voss starts with his own district and draws the rest of the state. if Robin Voss loses, I can tell you right now, I will tell you right now, if Robin Voss loses, then you are really looking at the possibility that the legislature does flip, right? But Robin Voss comes into this race with all the advantages of gerrymandering, all the advantages of money, all the advantages of huge name recognition. And so if he's having to work, then you go out into those other districts, particularly north suburban Milwaukee,
Jim Ott's district,
western Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And you're looking at a possibility, and I'm glad to say the number. I'm sure it won't be exactly that one way or the other, but I will say the possibility that you could see a 6 or 7 seat swing in the assembly to the Democrats. Now, if it's that much, that obviously doesn't give them control, but boy, does that improve their position. Makes it a dramatically different dynamic in that chamber.
In the last couple days, some of the stories in the paper with Alberta Darling, foolishly saying that the governor has everything they need and they don't need to come back into session. It's been hundreds of days since they've been back into session. They've done nothing.
So they have, and that's a very powerful message, right? The do nothing legislature is a powerful message. Frankly, I don't know if the governor's doing enough to deliver it. I think he should be out there talking about it more. Governor still has pretty high approval ratings, and so there's a good argument for using it in this moment. But I also think that one of the things to remember is that we're at the end of a gerrymandering cycle, right? These districts were drawn back in 2011. We're now in 2020. You know, we've gone through a number of cycles. And districts that were drawn to be very friendly to Republican incumbents in the 2012 cycle, the 2014 cycle, have changed. People move, dynamics shift.
Yeah, there's sorting going on between, people that used to vote Democratic up in Rhinelander that now vote Republican, and people that used that people live in Mequon that used to vote Republican that are now voting Democratic. This is happening all over the country. Tom DeLay's district is going to probably flip this year.
Yeah, and send a pretty progressive Democrat in. To give you an example, too, just here in Wisconsin, that Alberta Darling district, which has always been a little bit competitive, right? You know, it's always been one.
Yeah, but then they made it better for her after redistricting, right?
Without a doubt, they did. No question. But it still has had, there's still a Democratic base down in part of that district. And a lot of people have moved. It's funny. Yesterday I was talking to somebody who lives in Mequon, and he's a very conservative Republican. He's a Trump supporter. But he's an honest guy, and he says, I have never seen so many Democratic signs in Mequon. I've never seen so many Democratic signs up over that Milwaukee County line, moving up into Ozaukee and all Washington counties. And I think that one of the mistakes that people make is that they assume that districts and territory stays the same, that it's gerrymandered, it'll never shift. The fact is that there are shifts going on there. I'd be very surprised if Democrats don't pick up a couple seats over there, at least. I also think that western Wisconsin is coming back to the Democrats. And I suspect that Chris Marion, running down in southwestern Wisconsin, is in a very strong position. And I also suspect that you may see a couple other Democratic wins over there.
Chris Marion is one of the best Democratic candidates in the state right now. So finally, this is a treat. This is dessert, John. Okay. I know you're a healthy eater, but I'm sure you have dessert once in a while. Mm-hmm. Okay. Your wife is a tremendous cook.
Yes.
All right. So here's dessert. Okay. This is Lou Dobbs on the Fox Business Channel talking about Lindsey Graham.
I don't know why anyone in the great state of South Carolina would ever vote for Lindsey Graham. It's just outrageous. This is the guy who keeps saying, stay tuned. He said he was going to get to the bottom of Obamagate with the Judiciary Committee, which has been a year and a half, actually longer, of absolute inert response to these pressing issues of our day. Graham has betrayed President Trump at almost every turn. He has betrayed the American people and his oath of office. He's done absolutely nothing to investigate Obamagate, except to tell everyone, stay tuned. Time and time again, stay tuned. Senator Graham needs to be tuned out in South Carolina.
Whoa.
Okay, so let me give this a little context. Long before Donald Trump, you know, had Sean Hannity licking his boots, Donald Trump loves Lou Dobbs, even back to the CNN days, because Lou Dobbs was very much against free trade. And that's one thing that Donald Trump has always been opposed to. It's actually one of the few things he's been pretty consistent on. He doesn't understand the issue, but he has been opposed to it, right? Lou Dobbs is friends with Donald Trump. Do you think Lou Dobbs did that all on his own?
I do not. And now, I do think that both Dobbs and Trump are going to regret it if Lindsey Graham loses, because that could be a critical tipping point as regards the Senate and whether Republicans
have control. I don't think either of them are thinking particularly rationally right now.
Well, I also think it might be another thing, too. It might be an acceptance that Trump's unlikely to win. And so what do they care? Why not punish people they don't like along the way? And here's the interesting thing. Lindsey Graham has always been somebody that the kind of hardcore conservatives don't like. They don't like him. They haven't for a long time. That's why he's been so over the top in being a Trump champion, right? Since he made his switch, that he's been all in for Trump. Well, one of the reasons for that is that he knows he's not trusted. And so coming at this point, at this very late stage, to have Lou Dobbs saying that, and rest assured, it will be heard in South Carolina.
If I were Jamie Harrison,
I would put it right on, or a
third-party group, I would put that up on the air. I'm hoping Rick Wilson saw that from
you
the Lincoln
Rick
group.
Wilson missed that? I doubt he did.
No. I said I hope he saw that.
I'm teasing. Yeah. I think he probably. I suspect he saw it. And look, this is the biggest. This is such an important thing for you to highlight there, because the truth is that the presidential race is now on a trajectory. Unless we're missing something, and we may be, and I fully acknowledge that up front, and the polls are way off, Biden's got a pretty solid lead, and his chances of prevailing are getting pretty good. The great fight is for the Senate, and I suspect that the second that you figure the presidential race out on November 4th or 5th or whenever, you got enough to make a call, then everybody's attention is going to instantaneously flip over to these Senate races. And I mean, that's going to be the defining fight, is can you have governance come out of this election? And that'll be decided by who wins the Senate. If South Carolina flips, which I think is still a very high bar, there's a lot of other states that I think are likely to flip before, but if South Carolina flips, I think there's a very, very good chance that Joe Biden gets a Senate he can work with if he's president, and he can govern.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation, thanks for coming to Sly's office.
Before I leave, let me say one thing. You really are, despite your performance sometimes, an incredibly polite guy.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.